Good afternoon. We are awaiting Governor Bobby Jindal's address to the legislature on the opening day of the 2015 session. I'm Amy Jeffries in the WRKF studio with Michael Henderson, director of LSU's Public Policy Research Lab, and political scientist Robert Hogan. Good to have you both here.
Hi, Amy.
Nice to be here.
So in odd-numbered years like this one, the legislature deals primarily with fiscal issues. And this time it's quite a doozy with a $1.6 billion budget shortfall looming. Mike, in the latest Louisiana survey, the Public Policy Research Lab showed that the public is looking for state government to come up with a mix of spending cuts and tax increases to close that large gap. Did the survey offer any clues as to what mix might be the most palatable?
No, it really didn't. In fact, that's going to be part of the challenge that state government faces in this session. The large majority of the public wanted a mix of like you said, both sort of generic revenue increases and spending cuts. But on the specifics, there was not a lot of support for any specific cuts. In many cases, they actually wanted more spending for things like education and health care. And on specific taxes, there was very little support for raising taxes. The tax that got the most support for seeing an increase was the tax on tobacco, which had just shy of a majority, 50%, favoring an increase in the tobacco tax.
And Robbie, from a political standpoint, are there particular solutions, particular buttons that the governor is trying to push with the proposals that he is likely to outline today?
Well, I think he's trying to come up with whatever he can to solve this $1.6 billion gap. And I think what he's going to be doing is he's going to be looking for the legislature to come up with alternative solutions as well. I mean, he's laid it out what he wants to do in his executive budget, but he's also said that he's open for alternative solutions in terms of raising revenue and closing this gap. So I think he's probably going to basically restate his priorities of this session and probably ask the legislature to work with him as best they can to come up with some solutions.
Yeah, he has already indicated that he intends to stick to the no tax pledge that he signed. That's a pledge put out there by Grover Norquist with Americans for Tax Reform. Are you expecting to hear him reiterate that specifically?
I think probably so. I mean, one of the things that the governor has given great latitude to Louisiana, and people, the legislators, look to him for leadership in these kinds of matters greatly. And, I think he will probably be laying down some markers of what he is willing to accept and what he won't accept. He has the ability to veto legislation. Legislators know that. He also has a line item veto, which they are quite aware of because they have lots of pet projects in the budget. So I think he's probably indeed going to say what is acceptable and what's not. And what he's has indicated so far is that he is willing to get rid of some of these tax credits. But beyond that, things like the tobacco tax and other things, new taxes, those are going to have to be offset by other tax cuts. So if he's consistent and he wants to make that point, I suspect he'll have something to say about that today.
I could see that the governor has entered the House chambers and is shaking hands with many of his state colleagues in the state legislature. As he's making his way up to the podium, we will certainly bring up his speech as soon as he makes it there. One of the ideas that the Jindal administration has put forward to save the state some money is doing away with refunds for businesses who are paying local inventory taxes. That is an idea that has not so far been particularly popular with the business community, and a business community that has largely been aligned with the Jindal administration for most, if not all, of his tenure in the governor's mansion. To either of you, the Louisiana survey found that 26% feel like business conditions in Louisiana are actually on the upswing. What does Jindal have to do today or indicate today to maintain that impression?
I think he's likely to talk about the economy in Louisiana. He's in a tricky position though, and this is one of the things I'll be curious to see is how much in the speech he's going to want to reflect back on his tenure in office, a record, not just talk about this session. And in the past, he's liked to talk about the economy because in many instances, on many data points, Louisiana's economy has sometimes fared well in comparisons to the economy nationally. That has a harder case to make. It's a more mixed and in some cases not as good as trends in the national economy the last few months. So it'll be interesting to see how he tries to navigate that. But I expect he's going to want to come up and say, look, we've had growth in our economy since I took office. People are optimistic about the economy. We need to be doing the things that I've been doing this whole time. And he's probably in that going to reference sort of we don't want to raise taxes.
Yeah, at their legislative briefing last week, the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry, Stephen Wagesbeck, who's the president of that organization, indicated that, he didn't think that there was necessarily a conflict between, for example, economic development, that certainly has been a hallmark of the Jindal administration, and higher education, which has become the poster child for the budget crisis that the legislature is having to deal with. So full disclosure, again, you guys are both LSU employees, but we're looking at the president of LSU saying that, if things go as bad as they could, you're looking at a state university system that has almost no state funding at all. Again, what does the governor have to say today to assure the public and the legislature that colleges and universities are safe?
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be a sales job for his executive budget, which says, look, we really need to think about these tax credits that we've been giving businesses. And the business community will probably say needs to step up to the plate and be more willing to accept these reductions in these refunds. Because you're right, the higher education is certainly something that hangs in the balance, and you can't have any long-term economic development, certainly, if you cut back too close on those sorts of things. So this is a big problem, and it's going to be interesting to see what he says about that today, and certainly how he's able to negotiate with the business community, which has, as you pointed out, is up until this has been quite supportive of his policies throughout his tenure.
Yeah. I'm Amy Jeffries with Robert Hogan and Michael Henderson from LSU, and you're listening to special coverage of the governor's speech on the opening day of the 2015 legislative session. The members of the state legislature are hearing an invocation at the moment before the governor gets up to the podium, and we will certainly join the proceedings there as soon as he makes it to the podium to deliver his remarks. As we have said, this is a fiscal session, so lawmakers are limited in the number of bills that they can file that don't have to do with revenue and budget. Is the governor going to try to make headlines today with some of that other stuff, maybe Common Core or issues around the recognition of marriage for same-sex couples? The governor is making it to the podium, so I guess we will listen in and find out.
Statewide elected officials, members of the legislature, the people of the great state of Louisiana. Thank you, first of all, for that very warm welcome. It is certainly an honor to be here with you again. Well, here we are. Moment so many of us have been waiting for a very long time. My last State of the State speech. No, that was not supposed to be an applause line. But I do appreciate your restraint. I'd like to start by asking you to think back 10 years ago about the time that Hurricanes Katrina and Rita hit our state. Louisiana was at rock bottom. Our economy was stagnant. We had over two decades of out-migration with more people leaving Louisiana than moving here. Jobs were scarce and the future didn't look so bright. And then the storms hit. You actually had national political leaders suggesting that maybe New Orleans shouldn't even be rebuilt. We lost more than 1,000 of our citizens, our parents, our children, our neighbors, our friends in those storms. Many thousands more who did survive left the state. It's been said that you can really know the true character of a people only when the going gets rough. What happened next showed the true nature of the people of Louisiana. We are fighters. We never give up. We all came together to bring Louisiana back. Fast forward today. You see a far different picture of Louisiana. You see the true greatness of our people. Together, we rebuilt and we are today stronger than we have ever been. Together, we cleaned up our ethics laws so that now what you know is more important than who you know. Together, we reformed our education system so that now we provide choices and hope for children who were previously trapped in failing schools. Together, we reformed our healthcare system so that now it takes 10 minutes to fill a prescription rather than 10 days. Most importantly, today our economy is booming. We have more people living in Louisiana than at any time in our state's history. More people working in Louisiana than at any other time in our state's history. We have 90,000 more private sector jobs from companies that have expanded in our state. We have many more on the way. At the same time, we have balanced our budget every year. We cut taxes, and we've received 8 credit upgrades. Now, I want to stop here and acknowledge a few things. First, you may have noticed that I use the term we and not I, and that's on purpose. There's really not much that any of us can accomplish on our own. Without all of us pitching in, without all of us working together, none of this would have happened. Second, none of this has been easy. We all bear the scars to prove that. The way I figure it, it's really not hard to be a popular politician. All you need to do is not rock the boat. All you need to do is not change anything, spend all your time kissing babies and cutting ribbons. But what is the point in that? That is not why we were elected. We all came here to serve our fellow citizens, to make our state a better place to live, to thrive, to achieve the American dream. Some of us have different perspectives on how we reach that goal. But I believe we all want the same things for the people in our state. I also want to acknowledge that a lot of what we have done has been controversial. Many of us in this room have had big disagreements. Reform is always controversial. Democracy is always messy. But the end result has been a stronger, more prosperous Louisiana for our children. I also want to acknowledge there is much left to do. As long as we have people looking for work and not finding it, we have more to do. I know my critics contend that we have cut taxes too much, that we've cut government too much. I respect that opinion, but I don't agree with it. It's an honest difference of approach, and I think we can achieve more if we respect each other's views. I measure Louisiana's prosperity not by the prosperity of our government, but rather by the prosperity of our people. The truth is that none of us works for government. In fact, no government worker works for the government. All of us, elected or not, work for the people of the state of Louisiana, and it is an honor and a privilege to do so. I also want to acknowledge what you all already know. I haven't done everything perfectly. Now, in politics, everybody gets dug into a corner to the point where they pretend they're always completely right. Their opponents are always completely wrong. But I think that's a mistake. Now, I want to highlight the 3 things of great importance in this session as we begin this legislative session. First, what's on everybody's mind? The budget. We must balance our budget without raising taxes on our people. It is their money, not ours. Now, I know there's heartburn in this room, in the media, and probably with some of your constituents about the budget challenge we face this year as a result of falling oil prices, along with our refusal to raise taxes the past several years. But I have the utmost confidence that we're going to come together, make smart reductions to the size of government where we can, and yet again have another balanced budget that doesn't raise taxes. Now, the easy way out for politicians is simply to raise taxes. If we were in Congress, we could just print more money. We could borrow more from the Chinese. But we don't live by Washington's rules of kicking our debts down the road. When it comes to raising taxes, we know that when government takes more of our people's hard-earned money, our economy lags, job growth lags, and we put families in a tight spot. I'd rather have the government cut its budget than force families to cut their budgets. It all comes down to this. Do we think we can spend our citizens' money better than they can? For one, I do not. Now, that being said, I know that government provides some vital services. I want those services protected, provided they're running efficiently and not being wasteful. That is why we have laid out a budget proposal that seeks to protect higher education, healthcare, and other important government functions by going after wasteful state spending and our tax structure. The truth is, today we have a system of corporate welfare in this state. Our businesses are a great asset, but we cannot stand idly by while companies pay zero in state taxes and then continue getting free taxpayer money from the government on top of it. If companies are getting checks from the taxpayer as opposed to paying taxes, then that is government spending that needs to be examined and reduced. It would be wrong for us to impose cuts to higher education in order to protect this corporate welfare. We have identified over $500 million of corporate welfare spending that we think should be cut to help protect higher education and health care. Now, I know there are some in this chamber that will want to reject cutting corporate welfare and instead try to raise tax rates or eliminate other tax credits that help a business lower its tax liability. But I hope we remember how we got to this point where we are today, where we have more people working with higher incomes than ever before. We didn't get here by raising taxes or by expanding the size and scope of government. We got here by drastically lowering taxes and empowering growth in Louisiana's private sector. It's true that fiscal responsibility isn't easy, but it works. I'm proud to say our economy is bigger, the government is smaller, and our state is stronger than ever. I know if we stick to the principles that got us here, we will continue this trend. Now, the second issue I want to talk to you about today, I want to talk about education reform. In my very first year as governor, we worked together to create a school choice program for the children in New Orleans. Every year since, we have come back here and we have worked together to implement some of those comprehensive and ambitious reforms in our state's history. It was difficult work, but our children are the beneficiaries of that work. This is an issue I care deeply about. It's why I'm here to tell you that in this session, we have to get rid of Common Core. This is not a debate about high standards. I'm all for high standards, I think we all are. This debate has nothing to do about that. This is about the federal government deciding that they need to set the standards for us because we are not sophisticated enough to do it on our own. This is a question of federal control of education. This is about federal coercion with the federal government attempting to blackmail us with our own tax dollars. This is about the federal government finding a backdoor way to dictate curriculum to our state and to every state. I've met with the parents. I've met with teachers. I've read the flood of letters to the editors of local papers begging the education establishment to listen, to slow down, to reevaluate Common Core. I know this firsthand from sitting down and doing homework with my kids. Today, we're at a crossroad. We have a choice regarding who will run education in Louisiana. Will it be Louisiana parents and teachers, or it'll be the federal government? I don't know about you, but I will take teachers and parents every chance I get. Now, let's be clear what this debate is about. I care deeply about high, rigorous standards. They were embedded in me at an early age. My dad's here, and he can tell you this. He wasn't happy when my brother and I, when we brought home straight A's. If we got a 95%, he wanted to know what happened to the other 5%. I brought that same mindset to education reform in Louisiana. We've made increased rigor and achievement the central pillars of our reforms. We raised accountability for teachers while increasing professional development. We raised accountability for our schools, graded them, and held them responsible for their own growth. As a result, in the last 6 years, Louisiana has seen unprecedented gains in education. Our graduation rates are at an all-time high. We've cut the number of failing schools in half. But just as important as our educational improvement is the way in which we achieved it. By expanding choices for parents, not limiting them, demanding equal opportunity in education. These are hallmarks of education reform with proven results all over the country. Yet the federal government is only interested in rewarding adherence to a nationalized set of standards. I believe that we can pass legislation that makes clear that the federal government or third parties do not have control over Louisiana schools and help ensure that Louisiana parents and teachers create Louisiana standards and curriculum. I believe this session that we can come together on a plan that removes Common Core from Louisiana and replaces it with high-quality Louisiana standards. Third, there is a nationwide push by the far left to weaken the First Amendment to the Constitution. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech. We either believe in religious liberty or we don't. In Louisiana, I believe that we do. I know there has been legislation filed this session that aims to protect religious liberty rights right here in Louisiana. And let me be crystal clear. I absolutely intend to fight for the passage of this legislation and any other that seeks to preserve our most fundamental freedoms. But let me also be clear about something else. In Louisiana, we do not support discrimination, and we do support religious liberty. And we believe that we can uphold both of these values simultaneously. But the truth is, this should not be a conservative versus liberal debate. Last I checked, we were all in favor of the Bill of Rights. And here in Louisiana, as long as I'm your governor, we will protect religious liberty, and we will not apologize for doing that. I want to directly address the legislation that was filed to protect those freedoms in Louisiana. Let's clear up some falsehoods about the bill that we've already started to hear. All this bill does is provide necessary protections for individuals to prevent adverse treatment from the state based on religious beliefs regarding marriage. This legislation does not allow a restaurant or industry to refuse service to a gay or a lesbian person. The law merely ensures the state cannot deny a license, certification, accreditation, or contracts to a person or a business on the basis of their sincerely held religious beliefs about marriage. It does not provide a right for a business owner to discriminate against gays or lesbians. I think we can all agree that the government should never force someone to participate in a marriage ceremony against their will. People, charities, and family-owned businesses should not be penalized because they believe in the traditional definition of marriage. Now, regardless of your beliefs about the definition of marriage, we should all respect the right of our neighbors to hold a different view. There used to be bipartisan support for the principle of religious liberty. However, these days, some think diversity of belief is too risky, too scary to be tolerated. But that's wrong. In America, we should celebrate diversity of belief. Diversity of belief and religious liberty are the foundation of our law and Constitution, and they must be protected. In the United States, a state should not be able to take adverse action against an individual for holding a sincerely held religious view regarding marriage. Now that would be true discrimination. As I come to the conclusion of my last state of the state, I want to make a few personal observations. I want to do this, first of all, by recognizing three special groups of people that are here today. Many of you may have noticed that we have three special guests. Last year, I told you I'd be bringing my children for the first time to my final state of the state. I'd like to ask my children, my daughter Celia is 13 years old. She is here with her brother, Sean, who turned 11 on Friday, and her youngest brother, Slade, who is 8. I would like them to stand, and I'd ask you to please recognize them with a round of applause. Keep her around and say hello. Thank y'all very much. The reason I asked them to come today, and I know it breaks their heart they had to miss school to be here. I know this was a big sacrifice. Celia was 6, Sean was 3, Slade was 1 when I took my oath of office as your governor for the first time. The reason I ran for office in the first place was my children. The reason I wanted to be your governor, I'm so grateful for this opportunity, is I wanted to work with you to create a better Louisiana for all of our children and grandchildren. I was born and raised here, and I was tired of seeing for too long our best and brightest have to leave this state to pursue their opportunities, their dreams. So I want to thank you. It has been a privilege to work with you to create opportunities not only for them, but all of our children and grandchildren. And I believe it is what motivates us to be here today and through these weeks of this session. Now, I will say this about Slade. We sat down with the kids last night, told them they had to wear their best clothes, told them they had to behave, told them we're going to check them out of school today at lunch. And today, when Supriya was gathering them and had them to get into their good clothes, she told Slade, the 8-year-old, now you're going to the Capitol. And a light bulb went off in his head. He goes, well, that makes sense, because all day long yesterday, we told him he was coming to the House, and he had no idea why he had to dress up to go to the House. So now he understands why we're here. The second person I want to recognize is not only my best friend, my partner, the love of my life, but your First Lady, Supriya Jindal. We are going to be celebrating 18 years of marriage later this year. If you would please stand, if you'd please give Supriya Jindal a great round of applause. Thank you for that. I couldn't be here today without her love and support, and I want to especially thank her for the work she has done going to schools in every part of the state, bringing technology and donations and resources to help our children get a better education. I want to thank her parents, my father-in-law, my mother-in-law, for their love and support. They've been at every State of the State speech, and they also many years ago allowed me to marry their beautiful daughter. So thank you for your love and support as well. I want to close by recognizing my parents. Now, my dad is here today, and I want to thank him for being here. Many of you may have noticed that for the very first time, my mom is not here. She's been at every inauguration. She's been at every State of the State speech. I want to tell you that she is at home recovering from surgery. Now, this is the first time that I'm publicly speaking about this, but a month ago when we got the diagnosis, I'll be honest with you, this is something that's been weighing on me every day. But here's the good news. We believe in a God that answers prayers. We believe in a loving God. So I would just ask you to keep her and my dad in your prayers and your thoughts. I wouldn't be here without their love and support. My mom is my biggest cheerleader, and I know she's watching at home this speech. So thank you, Mom, for all that you've done for me. I want to close with this observation. Last year, I told you about my parents' story. Told you about the fact that over 40 years ago, they got on a plane for the first time. My dad brought his pregnant wife to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. My dad, who's lived the American dream, one of nine kids, only wanted to get past the fifth grade. Grew up in a house without electricity, without running water. It amazes my kids. There was no Google, there were no computers, there was no online search. They hadn't visited Louisiana before. They had never met anybody who had been to Louisiana that could go back to India and tell them what it was like. Nobody that could tell them about the people, the food, the culture, the temperature, nothing. And they came anyway. And they came to an idea as much as they came to a place. They came to the idea of the American dream, where you could find freedom and opportunity. I want to start by thanking the great people of Louisiana. The state of Louisiana has been very good to my family and to me. LSU took my mother in. My dad got his first job by calling through the Yellow Pages, until somebody from a railroad company hired him sight unseen. And here I am over 40 years later, privileged to serve as a governor of this great state. And it is my hope and it is my dream that my children, your children, our grandchildren can find the same opportunities that brought my parents halfway across the world here in the first place. That Louisiana will continue to be that beacon of opportunity for all of our children and grandchildren. I'm proud we have made great progress to making Louisiana that place, the best place in the world to raise a family and create good-paying jobs. We've made dramatic progress these last 7-plus years together, but we're not done. We've got more work to do, and I know this will be a productive session, and we will leave our state stronger for the time that we spend together in this building. And for that, I'm grateful to you. So thank you for your service. Thank you for these last 7-plus years. I'm looking forward to having a strong final session. God bless you. God bless the people of the great state of Louisiana. God bless the United States of America. Thank you all very, very much, and good luck in the coming days and weeks.
That was Governor Bobby Jindal addressing the state legislature one last time on the opening day of the 2015 session. I'm Amy Jeffries here in the WRKF studio with Michael Henderson, director of LSU's Public Policy Research Lab, and political scientist Robert Hogan. The biggest round of applause there was for Jindal's kids. Yeah.
I mean, that was the biggest applause line, but he got some other ones as well. I thought he got a good bit of applause when he talked about ending corporate welfare. That's something you don't normally hear Jindal talk about that much. And it indicates, I think, his desire to get rid of these payments to corporations for their local taxes that they pay. This is his solution, his elixir to this budgetary problem that we have. And I think it's interesting that he, in fact, made that a thing right up front. You know, the other parts of the speech, he said there were three major things. That was one of them. The second one was school choice, getting rid of Common Core. This has been an issue which he changed his position on, right? He was someone who was very in favor of this, but there was a grassroots, if you will, opposition to it across the nation. And he, I think, is sort of tapping into that sentiment and trying to change that. The third one, I have to say, was kind of shocking, I thought, that he was going to protect the First Amendment. It's necessary for Louisiana to pass a law that helps to protect the First Amendment. I think most legal experts would agree that this is a solution trying to find a problem here. This is something that has been it's a symbolic issue that's gotten a lot of attention nationally, and I think this is a way that Jindal sees to regain some national attention by making this a major part of his agenda.
Right. This religious freedom bill that's being proposed in Louisiana is coming on the heels of proposals that certainly caught attention in Indiana and our neighbor Arkansas. And, you know, basically deals with, as you said, I think he articulated it fairly accurately as I have read the legislation. I am not a lawyer, but just reading the language of the bill, it seems intended to specifically look at the state and the state's ability to penalize businesses or individuals for exercising religious beliefs. And it would seem to talk specifically about recognition and belief surrounding marriage. There has been some talk that bills like this, proposals like this, are kind of anticipating whatever the U.S. Supreme Court might do this summer in its ruling on a couple of cases involving same-sex couples who are or want to be married and have the legal benefits that might come along with that. And so as an anticipation that there might be some coercion or some forced hands with respect to policies that come down from the federal government, and this is maybe a reaction to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is something that, like you said, got an enormous amount of attention in Arkansas and in Indiana. And it's something also that one has to recognize rallies the base of support of the Republican Party nationally. This is something that the marriage equality issue is something that does not set well with that group. And this is a way, I think, that Jindal, I would personally think, is trying to tap into that sentiment. Perhaps get some national attention for his position on this.
Mike, I want to bring you in on this. You've gathered some data recently on the public opinion in Louisiana with respect to this issue, and I guess I'm just wondering whether or not you would expect, based on the opinions that you've seen, this to be an issue that's quite divisive for the legislature or not.
Well, I mean, it is true that same-sex marriage is, you know, slowly, legal recognition of same-sex marriage is slowly gaining support in Louisiana, slower than nationwide. But opposition does still outweigh support. But like I said, the trends are moving in the direction of that we've seen across the country. It is not an issue that really jumped off the survey results in terms of what people considered the important problems facing the state. I too was a little bit surprised, not that Jindal is necessarily taking, Governor Jindal is necessarily taking the position that he is, but that he made it one of his three major pieces of the speech. And to me, it's sort of a telltale sign that he's really, the speech, to a certain degree, I think a rather large degree, is pitched to a national audience. Governor Jindal really had an opportunity here to handle this issue in a couple of different ways. He could do what it looks like he's doing and sort of come out and back this bill and sort of become this sort of fierce supporter. Or he could have, you know, without opposing it, he could have said, look, well, there have been backlashes in Indiana and Arkansas, and Republican governors have started in those states have started to sort of step back some. And he could have avoided having to do that by simply saying, look, we have a bill that we passed a couple years ago. So, you know, we're ahead of the game here. We've already handled this issue and we didn't have to get caught up in those fights. Either way, it would fit with his sort of conservative credentials. But this suggests that he really wants it to be a centerpiece of a fight that he wants to have, an issue that he's associated with.
Yeah, we're sort of in the middle right now of what seems like a cascade of presidential campaign announcements. Of course, Hillary Clinton made her announcement officially yesterday, and Marco Rubio stepped up to do the same today. Gentile's camp has said that there won't be any announcement from him until this legislative session is over in June. But it sounds like you guys both think that nonetheless he's trying to make a mark here and continue to improve his credentials for whatever his next move might be. Other than the religious freedom bill and this issue over that, were there other things in the speech that you thought were directed specifically at a national audience?
I think so. There were sort of a few signs that I was looking for. One, he did a bit more than I expected. The other, not quite as much, but still did. So one of them was to go back and reflect on his tenure in office and describe it in the positive terms that he used. So he talked about sort of ethics laws, education reform, healthcare reform. None of those issues, with the exception of Common Core, but when he talked about education reform, he was talking about teacher development and accountability and school choice. None of those issues are on the table this session, but he built them into this sort of resume. Look what we've accomplished here. Look at what's happened under my tenure. So to me, that suggests he's sort of pitching a broader appeal than just speaking to these legislators, let's solve this budget problem. The other thing that he did that suggests to me it's a national audience, although he didn't do quite as much as I expected, is he did sort of make pokes at the federal government, at Washington, D.C., at Congress. So those two things, as well as sort of putting these sort of red meat issues of Common Core and the religious freedom bill on the table, all sort of suggest to me, anyhow, that this is a speech to a broader audience than just the legislators or even just the public in the state of Louisiana.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting too that he started off by framing it as, you know, this is the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina and Rita this year, a time that of course was very dark for Louisiana and made the state look really, really bad. And people nationally will be thinking a lot about that in the coming months. There'll be a lot of media coverage of that and in a way kind of making a mark early on what the story should be 10 years on. And you know, he's been in the governor for 8 of those last years, or will be by the time that the anniversary, in fact, rolls around. So I thought that was an interesting choice, too, to just kind of start off by saying, hey, this is the story I want you to see or hear when you start talking about the anniversary of Hurricanes Katrina and Rita.
Yeah, I mean, in indicating his accomplishments, pointing out that his support of low taxes, low regulation environment has spurred economic vitality in the state, whether or not that is in fact a causal relationship is clearly debatable. I think that a lot of this was geared towards a national audience, and I think that a lot of people have sort of been thinking, well, Jindal, no one's paying him a lot of attention to him. He's not getting a lot of attention in national polls among Republican activists. Expectations right now are kind of low going into this session. You got $1.6 billion shortfall. If this thing does not, or it does materialize, or he's able to bring it into balance in a way that isn't so detrimental to important governmental services, if the business community isn't so upset, he'll come out of this looking pretty good. And I think a lot of people at the national level will be giving him a second look. The field is wide open on the Republican side for the presidential nomination for the Republicans. And I think he's going to be someone who will have this resume, as we were talking about, that he can say, look, I've accomplished these things. And the policies that I've adopted are the ones that have worked.
What about this verbiage of corporate welfare? I thought that was interesting, you know, especially in light of the possibility of a presidential campaign coming from Governor Jindal. You know, the last presidential cycle, there was a lot of talk about corporations as people.
Right. Yeah, this is rhetoric you normally hear on the left. But this is something he's taking up, and I think it demonstrates how important it is that these tax credits be part of this resolution of this budgetary impasse. If he can get people to say, yes, it's corporate welfare, let's cut that. You know, the business community, he's going up against them in this fight, and they're very difficult to defeat. And so if he can get the public behind him on this issue, I think, you know, he will be successful in getting his version of the budget adopted.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty clever version of a bit of framing. I mean, there's not a lot of options on the table here for the legislature to take to deal with this crisis. And so they're going to have to take a look at some of these tax incentive programs. And the governor clearly has some that he prefers get a closer examination, and some that he's less interested in going after. And so he like the legislature as a whole, is going to have to come to these tax credits to some extent. And so I thought this was a pretty interesting bit of framing to highlight the ones he wants to go after and then cast them in this term. We did in the Louisiana survey this year, we asked people if they thought businesses in the state pay their fair share or too little or too many taxes. And people did not feel businesses paid too little in taxes. They felt businesses, for the most part, paid their fair share. But we also asked a separate group of people if they thought corporations in the state paid their fair share of taxes. And overwhelmingly, they feel corporations in the state do not pay their fair share of taxes. So even though the corporate tax sort of applies to both these entities, you just call them different things, you get this vastly different response from the public. And so this, I thought, was a clever bit of framing to sort of go after them as corporate welfare.
Right. Well, there was some other news recently coming out of the, I guess it was economist Mr. Scott, who was looking at, Lauren Scott specifically, looking at the taxes paid, income taxes paid by the largest companies, which might be thought of as corporations in the state of Louisiana, and finding that about a quarter of the biggest companies operating the state, you know, weren't paying at all. So maybe, Mike, it sounds like the impression might have some truth to it as far as the public's impression of what corporations put in and what they actually do.
Yeah, I think so. I think when people think in terms of corporation, they're thinking big business, and, you know, that just has this sort of negative connotation associated to it, not just in Louisiana, but anywhere. Big business, it's the bad guys. And so business, well, just generically, well, that could be the mom and pop grocer down the street, right? And so it's easier to go after a tax benefit for an entity if you cast it in this negative connotation, and sort of using this label of corporate welfare is, like I said, is a clever way of doing that.
I mean, even some of Jindal's own people are coming out and pointing out the empirical facts about this. You know, Tim Barfield indicated, and it was quoted in the newspaper, saying that of the 87 largest Louisiana companies that filed taxes in 2012, only 22 paid corporate income taxes. So the empirical reality is starting to match the public perception here. And you're right, it's a framing issue in which he's able to frame it in this way and get the public behind it, and hopefully with it the needed number of legislators to adopt his version of the budget.
Now, do you think there are possibilities to target proposals that would really just go after these really big companies, as opposed to just all business? You know, we're talking about things like the inventory tax credit, which, right, you know, right now applies to any company, any business at all that has inventory. This is a tax where or a tax credit where the state will reimburse businesses who pay local property taxes, essentially inventory taxes, right, to local municipalities. They get a credit on their state taxes for that. So that applies to everybody across the board. But is there a possibility that there could be negotiated things that would just deal with the highest echelon, the big guns, the big corporations that are operating here. And would that politically be palatable? Are those not also the same entities that have a tendency to back and support politicians?
Right. I mean, what you're doing is if you just target toward the big businesses, which tend to be those that belong to the Louisiana Association of Business and Industry, which is widely acknowledged to be the one most powerful of the interest groups in the state, certainly of the business groups, you're going to run up against a brick wall there. I mean, that's one way of doing it. That while that might work in terms of getting public opinion behind you on it. Maybe a better way is to have it where it spreads the pain, so to speak. That might be an easier way of getting it through the legislature. It's really hard to say.
Right, but couching it as corporate welfare might make it something that you
right.
could message.
Right? No matter who it applies to. Yeah.
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 Of course, we've been talking about the governor. It was his speech today to the joint session of the legislature, which will be spending the next couple of months working on these issues and coming up with solutions for the budget and for issues of education and religious and other liberties. But to what extent does this speech today also kind of outline some of the issues that are going to be at stake in the election for the next governor, which will be heating up just as this legislation, just as this session is winding up in June?
Well, I think it does a lot, but also in terms of what he didn't talk about, because obviously he had to address the fact that there's this budget problem, but they can address some aspects of the budget problem this year by dealing with some of these tax incentives in the way the governor's proposing. He also has some other aspects of his budget that he didn't get into that could deal with it as well. But in sort of long-term ways to address it, I think it's going to involve sort of a deeper look at state finance. And he didn't get into that here because it's not really on his agenda for this session. That's still going to be looming. And the other things that he didn't talk about that I think still be looming next year are things like funding for healthcare, whether or not to deal with the Medicaid expansion funding or not. And so he didn't talk about that. Issues like financing of TOPS, he didn't talk about that, right? Those are really tough, big issues that were not in this speech, and that means they're challenges that are still out there to be dealt with that are going to fall directly in the lap of the next administration.
Yeah, the problem here is, you know, kicking the can down the road. In that over the past few years, so much of the funding that has been found has been from trust funds. It hasn't been from recurring dollars. And that, over a period of time, has resulted in the sort of situation we now find ourselves in. And some of the candidates for governor right now, who will be running later this year, have indicated one of their first things they want to do is hold a special session to get some handle on these budgetary issues. This is going to be, the budget is going to be front and center, the biggest issue facing the next governor, whoever that may be.
Yeah, talking about specifics, we didn't hear a lot of specifics, although he referenced it, to, you know, how do you preserve higher education and how do you preserve health care. In the remarks that the governor did make today, were there any assurances there on those two notions?
I think he did indicate his commitment to higher education to some extent, but no specifics about exactly how to do that, other than his executive budget that everyone has already. He did indicate his commitment to not raising taxes. I mean, that is an important thing, and I think he was pretty clear about that, without raising taxes. And that creates a situation where you're going to have to look at these alternatives. The long-term trust funds, that money is not as available as it was because so much of it has been used. If you can't get it from taxes, you're going to have to look at these tax credits. And basically what it does is it's trying to focus the legislature's attention on that solution as opposed to others.
Yeah, and did he, again, going to his comments about corporate welfare, did it sound to you that he was sort of pitting that idea of giving credits and supports and incentives for businesses against higher education and healthcare? Did you hear that, Mike?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, at one point he even made sort of this one comment where he explicitly said, like, it's good to do things that can foster economic development, but we can't pay government funds to corporations at the expense of, you know, these needed services such as higher education and healthcare. So he did sort of cast it in that way. And that does a couple of things, I suspect. I mean, one is it does, you know, it suggests that, you know, he can come out there and say, look, I'm not the villain to higher education and healthcare in this state. I'm trying to protect them. And look, I want to go find these other means of dealing with this budget shortfall without having to go back and cut higher education or healthcare further. So that's one thing it does. The other thing it does, it sort of, you know, it kind of starts to form alliances out there, right? Because, you know, it suggests that, hey, if you also don't want to go after higher education or healthcare, look at what I'm looking at here and join me in the fight to resolve the budget through these issues.
Yeah, there's been a lot of talk about the relationship that the governor has and what the mood is in the legislature right now, and whether this is a legislature that is willing and able to work with him one last time, or whether or not they're just sort of biding their time for whomever the next governor may be, who is likely to be someone, based on the current candidates lined up, likely to be someone who has quite a bit of experience being in the state legislature, which Governor Jindal did not have.
Right. I mean, this is going to be someone who, I mean, Vitter obviously has been in the legislature. He's mm-hmm. a major leading candidate, Jay Darden, and another major contender, at least on the Democratic side, the only Democratic candidate, John Bel Edwards, who is the leader of the House Democrats right now. So, you're right. This is going to, The budget, if the can is kicked down the road, it's going to be left to probably someone who's had significant legislative experience. Jindal has been faulted so much during his tenure as someone who hasn't been willing to work with the legislature, especially in this past year. He's been out of the state a good bit of the time, almost half the time. Mm-hmm. And forging those alliances can be important for coming up with compromises that are solutions that are palatable to perhaps a wider number of groups in the state.
The governor seemed to speak directly to that issue of his travels of late in the speech. He said that, you know, quote, we want all the same things for the people of our state, and it seemed like he was speaking there to some of those who have been saying, hey, you're MIA, you're being guided by other ambitions out beyond the state of Louisiana.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big criticism, and I think rightly so. And it's very strange, actually, to read in the newspaper that the governor's staff saying that they have been in contact with this national organization about what sort of tax increase or changes to our revenue structure in the state is palatable to this national interest group, watchdog group. This is kind of peculiar. And so he does have some explaining to do and some justification for his actions on this issue.
I'm Amy Jeffries. We've been discussing the governor's speech today to start the 2015 legislative session with Robert Hogan, a political scientist at LSU, along with Michael Henderson, who is the director of LSU's Public Policy Research Lab. The session will be continuing until June, and certainly we will be following it here on WRKF with Capital Access and Insight and otherwise. So do stay tuned to us for that. The governor today outlined three big agenda items: the budget and cutting what he called corporate welfare from the budget, two, getting rid of Common Core and the educational standards that he says were a tactic by the federal government to control curriculum in Louisiana and religious freedom. So this is 89.3 HD WRKF.